بسم الله، الحمد لله، والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه ومن والاه. ثم أما بعد، to proceed إن شاء الله. Today we will start our series, our كتاب النكاح series, which is فقه of marriage or family fiqh, family law, family matters. As we said before, we will go over العمدة as we did before. With fiqh of worship, we will go over al-umda and explain al-umda, which is an abridged book in fiqh according to the Hanbali madhab. Our explanation is comparative, so we bring in different positions, and we also use the choices of Imam al-Taymiyyah frequently. Because being a Hanbali himself, however liberal in the sense that he was not bound by the most popular position within the madhab would have more than one position, and he would choose the position that is more in conformity with the evidence. So he would sometimes choose the madhab or the position within the madhab that is consistent with Malik's madhab, consistent with Abu Hanifa's madhab, consistent with the Shafi'i's madhab, even if it was not the most popular position within the Hanbali madhab itself. We will not be covering all the details. We will be covering the details that would be most practical and most pertinent for people, particularly in the West, or in countries where Muslims are not a majority, or in countries where there is no Islamic court to judge between the people in family matters. So inshallah it will be more practical. However, we will go by the structure of Al-Umda, and we will go over the matn or the text of Al-Umda by Ibn Qudama. And as we said before, Ibn Qudama is one of the greatest scholars in the history of Islam. His book Al-Mughni was the greatest comparative fiqh book in the history of Islam. The difference between Al-Mughni and Al-Majmu' by Imam al-Nawawi is that Al-Majmu' was not completed by Imam al-Nawawi, whereas Al-Mughni was completed by Al-Imam ibn Qudama. And he died in the year 620 after Hijrah. And his book Al-Umda is the most abridged book in fiqh, because he had four different books in fiqh, and Mughni being the most comprehensive. And as we said, the Mughni is not only according to one madhab, it is according to the various madhahib, so it's comparative. Whereas Al-Umda, Al-Muqna' and Al-Kafi are according to the madhab of Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal. However, they vary in their size based on how many positions he quotes within the madhab and how much evidence he quotes. Well, let's start with the beginning. From the very beginning, Imam ibn Qudama, may Allah bestow mercy on him, said, "An-nikahu min sunan al-mursaleen." Marriage is of the sunnas of the messengers. وهو أفضل من التخلي منه لنفل العبادة, and it is better than forsaking it for the supererogatory acts of worship. وذلك لأن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم رد على عثمان بن مذعون التبتل. That is because the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم disapproved of Uthman ibn Maz'un's attempt at celibacy. وقال يا معشر الشباب من استطاع منكم الباءة فليتزوج ومن لم يستطع فعليه فإنه غض للبصر وأحسن للفرج ومن لم يستطع فعليه بالصوم فإنه له وجاء. Oh young people, whoever of you can get married, let them get married, for it is more conducive to lowering the gaze and more conducive to chastity. And whoever cannot get married or cannot afford to get married, let them fast, for it will be a protection for them from zina, from fornication. Okay, so if we try to go over, you know, that statement and we try to select only the details that are pertinent and that are practical. First of all, we have to talk about marriage itself. We have to talk about the subject, the definition of the topic that we will be talking about. And it is, in Arabic, it is an-nikah or az-zawaj. And an-nikah and az-zawaj, they both come from collecting, combining, joining, pairing up, coupling. That would be the meaning. So when you say tanakahat al-asjar, the trees were close to each other, or if you're, for instance, describe a jungle, and you say that in this jungle, asjar tanakahat, the trees became very close to one another. So tanakah comes from joining, and comes from collecting, gathering, combining, proximity, closeness. The same applies to az-zawaj. The same applies to az-zawaj. It also comes from coupling, pairing up. And when you say zawaja, it means paired up. Zawaja means paired up. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَإِذَا النُّفُوسُ زُوِّجَتْ وَإِذَا النُّفُوسُ زُوِّجَتْ. And on that day, or behold, when the souls or the inner selves will be coupled up, will be paired up. Paired up here means what? The souls or the inner selves will be paired up with the bodies, or the inner, or the people will be paired up with their likes, their comrades, or the people will be paired up with their deeds, and all of that is applicable. So the souls will be paired up with the bodies, the groups of people will be paired up with their likes, their comrades, their supporters in life, and each one will be paired up with his deeds. Each one will be paired up with his deeds. So each one will come on that day with his deeds, because that's the only thing that will be with you on the Day of Judgment. So that is the pairing, the coupling. This means that every group is paired up with its comrades or deeds, or the souls get joined with their bodies. So zawaj in this sense, in the context that we are talking about here, in the context of marriage, why do we call it zawaj? Why do we call it coupling, pairing up? Because it signifies the permanent fusion between two individuals into one unit, which is the family unit. It signifies the permanent fusion of two individuals into one unit to make a unit, which is the family unit. That family unit is the smallest structure in the society. So each family is one brick in the building of the society, where the husband is part of that, the wife is part of that, both of them would make that one unit. That does not mean that the person who is not married is insignificant. Absolutely not. There were great scholars in the history of Islam, Imam al-Nawawi, Imam ibn Taymiyyah, that we just mentioned both of them a little earlier. They were both not married. But it means that in general, the society does not survive without marriage. In general, that is the smallest unit in the structure of the society, the family. Because without the family, the society does not survive. The wisdom and why the wisdom of marriage, and this will show you how important that unit is, or how important that piece of the structure is. The wisdom of marriage is not only limited to recreation. it is not only limited to having progeny and offspring. That is part of it and a major part of it, and there is no denial. You know, when the Christians talk about al-Jannah and they say that there will be no physical pleasures in al-Jannah, and there is no, it is all emotional or spiritual pleasures in al-Jannah, they say, why do you need physical pleasures in al-Jannah? Why do you need conjugal relations in al-Jannah if there is no need for recreation, reproduction in al-Jannah? And the issue here is that this is not limited to reproduction. Marriage is not limited to reproduction. For animals, it is limited to reproduction to a great extent. So when you talk about, you know, when you talk about sex, conjugal relations, and consider this to be hedonistic, animalistic behavior, that is wrong. That is a mistake. It's a manifestation of love with which people were honored over animals. People were honored over animals by making this particular behavior or practice a manifestation of love, a manifestation of mercy. In the animal kingdom, they do not have sex except when they need to reproduce, right? There are seasons. But for human beings, that is not the case. It is different. It is not just for reproducing, and anyone whose ideas are tainted by, you know, such Christian theology or not necessarily Christian, but non-Islamic theology, they should purge this out of their minds. It is not about reproduction. It is not hedonistic and dirty. It's not filthy. It is a manifestation of love with which human beings were honored over animals. Because for them, it is for human beings, it's for reproduction as well as other benefits, including the benefit of the establishment, strengthening, and enhancement of mercy and compassion between those two individuals that will not only be limited to those two individuals, but will go beyond them to the families, to the two families that were joined into this relationship, the family of the husband, the family of the wife, and that helps foster better relationships between the different families. And if you can imagine also that, you know, a person from one tribe can marry another person from a different tribe, that will bring in, you know, some form of compassion between those two tribes when they meet in the wedding, they meet in the aqiqah, and so on and so forth, and they feel that they both have a stake in this one little unit or structure, which is this family. So there are many wisdoms, but we will not go into the, you know, the all of the details of those wisdoms behind marriage. But marriage is not only for reproduction. That is part of it, but it is not all of it. You can imagine how difficult life would be also for many people without a companion, without a companion. So does actually help people with going through their lives. And as I said, there have been great scholars who were not married, but for the vast majority of people, it is very difficult for them to carry on with life as, you know, single individuals, not having companionship. Okay. You would understand the importance of marriage if you also look at the five necessities that Islam protects, the five essential categories, the five necessities, al-daruriyat al-khams. And those are protecting the deen, life, honor and lineage together. You protect the deen, you protect the life, you protect the intellect, you protect the property, you protect the honor and lineage. and the property comes last. So you're protecting the honor and lineage. Certainly, marriage protects the honor and lineage, but it does not only stop here. It protects the deen, because the Prophet said, فَإِنَّهُ أَغَضُّ لِلْبَصَرِ وَأَحْسَنُ لِلْفَرْجِ, for it's more conducive to lowering one's gaze and having chastity or being chaste. So it protects the deen, and it also protects honor, lineage, life. That's a means of reproduction, and it does protect one's life. In fact, it also protects one's life in a different sense. Married people live longer than unmarried people, as statistics have shown, or new studies have shown. Despite the fact that it may actually feel the opposite, but that's what it is. That's what the studies have shown. It protects life, it protects the deen, it protects honor, lineage. Does it protect property? Does it protect your money? You may think that it doesn't. You may think that, you know, before you got married, you were much better off, and then afterwards, things have become quite difficult. But eventually, the successful people are usually married people. Successful people in business, successful people in various areas, in academics and business and so on and so forth. They are usually more the married people. Based on all of this, marriage is recommended. It says here, if you look up, I have the matn with us here on this slide as well. So marriage is of the sunnahs of the messengers. So therefore, marriage certainly must be recommended, must be encouraged. And when we say encouraged, that could mean preferable or mandatory, because mandatory is encouraged, and preferable is encouraged, or mustahab is encouraged, then wajib is encouraged. So when we say encouraged, then it is on the side of encouragement, not discouragement. There is a neutral point, which is the middle, which is mubah, and that is permissible, and there is one side that is called encouraged, and one side that is called discouraged. Under the one side that is called encouraged, you'll have mustahab and wajib, or a preferable and mandatory, and on the other side that is called discouraged, you will have the makruh and the haram, which is dislike or detested and forbidden. Is it always just a sunnah? The majority of the scholars said that the default is it is sunnah, default ruling, most of the time, generally speaking, it is a sunnah, according to the vast majority of the scholars. The Zahiris and Ibn Hazm, may Allah have so mercy on him and them, they chose that marriage is obligatory, because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Quran, فَانْكِحُوا مَا طَابَ لَكُمْ مِنَ النِّسَاءِ, then marry the women that you please, or وَأَنْكِحُوا الْأَيَامَ مِنْكُمْ وَالصَّالِحِينَ مِنْ عِبَادِكُمْ وَإِمَائِكُمْ, and marry those of you who do not have husbands and those who the righteous amongst your slave men and women. And the Prophet ﷺ said, يَا مَعْشَرَ الشَّبَابَ مَنْ اسْتَطَاعَ مِنْكُمُ الْبَاءَةَ فَلِيَتَزَوَّجْ, O young people, whoever can marry, let him or let them get married. So all of these are commands. However, the majority of the scholars said that these commands, if you look at some of the more subtle indications within the commands, you will come to the conclusion that these commands do not infer obligation, but rather preference, recommendation, encouragement. And that seems to be the stronger position, that the default ruling for marriage, in general, generally speaking, it is recommended. But then you will have an Imam Kasani, may Allah bestow mercy on him, in Bada'a al-Sana'a. He is saying here, and this is not only a Hanafi position, this is the position of the majority as well. This is the position of the majority as well. He says here, in Bada' al-Sana'a, there is no dispute. There is no disagreement. That marriage is an obligation when desire is strong. Marriage is an obligation when desire is strong. Therefore, the five legal values, Imam Taymiyyah says that the five legal values apply here. What are the five legal values? Wajib, mustahab, mubah, makruh, and haram. The five legal values apply here. Those are the five necessities that must be protected. Protecting one's, protecting deen and religion, life, you know, intellect, honor and lineage, and property. But the five legal values, which are wajib from the top, mustahab, mubah, makruh, haram, mandatory, preferable, permissible, disliked, and forbidden, all apply to marriage. How do you apply them all to marriage? Yes, depending on the circumstances and depending on multiple factors. Let's say, when is it mandatory to marry? If there is a lot of desire, if there is a strong desire and you fear for yourself that you may fall into error, you may fall into sexual immorality if you do not get married, then it is mandatory upon you to get married as long as you can afford it. It is mandatory on you to get married. So that is where it's mandatory. Now, when is it haram? You take the opposite side. When is it haram? You cannot fulfill the obligation. Let's say you have one wife and you want to marry a second. For legal counsel, ask your lawyer. I am talking about Islam here. If you have one wife and you want to marry the second, yet you are almost certain that you will not be fair, then it is haram to get married. Why is it haram? Because Allah says, فَإِنْ خِفْتُمْ أَلَّا تَعْدِلُوا فَوَاحِدًا. If you fear that you will not be just, then let it be one. So he made the fear that you may not be just. But some of the sisters would want to say that everyone should fear that they may not be just. Otherwise, then that would invalidate the whole, you know, injunction or the whole ruling of the permissibility of polygamy. And that was not shown to be true by the Sahaba of the Prophet ﷺ and so on and so forth. But many people should fear to be unfair because many people are not capable of being just based on their circumstances, based on their abilities and capacities and circumstances and so on and so forth. If they are afraid that they will not be just, then it is forbidden for them to get married a second time or to get to have a second wife. No, that's, you know, we're just saying that this second marriage here will be forbidden because the person is afraid that they will not be able to be just between all of the wives. Between all of the wives. Now, if he is not married, when is it not, if he is certain that he will not be able to fulfill the rights of that potential wife, and he, you know, or he hides from her things, or she hides from him things, and he is certain that he will not be able to fulfill the rights of the potential spouse. Now, when is it recommended? We said the default is that it is recommended. For the vast majority of people, it is recommended. When is it disliked? It is disliked if a person does not have a desire, and it will keep him back from things that are beneficial for him and the community. Does not have the desire. There are people who don't have the desire, and if he doesn't have the desire, it may be troubled for the spouse. Now, if he hides that from the spouse, then it is forbidden. But if he tells the spouse and the spouse is not particularly opposed to the idea, then it is permissible. It becomes disliked if it will lead to forsaking other benefits, other greater benefits. Because in this case, you know, there is not enough justification. But certainly, if it will not prevent him, and it will not hinder him, and it will not impede him, and it will not cause trouble, and they are both in agreement, well, let's say they're both, you know, he's 70 and she's 60 years old, and they just want to have companionship. That is absolutely fine, absolutely great. And it will be preferable if they have good intentions. Now, when is it, it is also disliked, let's say if someone is married to one wife and they don't have time, they don't have effort, you know, if they get married to a second wife, that will keep them away from doing things that they think are valuable, then it is disliked to get married to a second wife in this case. When is it permissible? When the benefit equals the, you know, the drawbacks. When the benefits and the drawbacks are equal, then it is permissible. So here he says marriage is of the sunnahs of the messengers, and we did talk about the ruling of marriage. We talked about the definition before, and we said it is the permanent fusion. No one asked me why you said permanent, because it's not Catholic marriage, right? We're talking about Islamic marriage.
It should be the intention.
Yes, because the intention should be permanency. You know, divorce is an exit when that is needed or required, and we will talk about the ruling of divorce thereafter. And so we'll talk about the ruling of divorce, inshallah, maybe in a few weeks. But the default ruling of divorce is al-hazr, discouraged to prohibited, not permissibility. Permissibility according to the majority of scholars. But the Hanafis, may Allah bestow mercy on them, and Ibn Taymiyyah chose that position out of the scholarly positions. The default ruling is impermissibility, not permissibility. Because the least he can say about it is that it is darar. It is harm to the wife. When a man divorces his wife, it is harmful. There is harm in divorce. And the Prophet ﷺ said, لَا دَرَرَ وَلَا دِرَارَ. There should be no harm, nor should there be any reciprocation of harm. So the default is impermissibility. Therefore, the intention of the person prior to getting married is permanency. Now, things did not work out, then divorce becomes of Allah's, you know, mercy for us and Allah's favor upon us that He granted us an exit out of a troubled relationship. Okay, so marriage is of the sunnahs of the messengers. It is better than forsaking it for the supererogatory acts of worship. You have to understand that the religion of Islam is not a religion of monasticism. Ahmad ibn Hanbal, when he was told about the worship of Bishr al-Hafi and the fact that Bishr did not get married, so he's capable of, you know, doing all of this, you know, certainly Bishr was one of the greatest, and this is not to belittle him in any way, but Ahmad ibn Hanbal said that the screaming of a child before his father, bring me sweets or dessert from the market, is more beloved to Allah than the worship of Bishr. So it is more beloved to Allah that you stay in life, inside it, and you do righteousness while you're inside. You don't take yourself out and seclude yourself and do righteousness. The test is to stay in and to do righteousness. To do righteousness at your workplace, to do righteousness when you take the bus to work, to do righteousness on your way back from work, to do righteousness, you know, while you're in, not when you're out. Uh, That is because the Prophet ﷺ disapproved of Uthman ibn Affan's attempt at celibacy. Moreover, he ﷺ said, O young people, let those of you who afford marriage get married, for it will help them lower their gaze and protect their chastity. And for those who do not afford it, they may fast, for it will curb the sexual desire, or from protect them from zina, or curb the sexual desire. Wija' means protection. Or wija' means, waja'a means cut off. So it kills the, or it curbs or it diminishes the sexual desire. So here in this hadith, you know, there is a lot of beauty in this hadith, by the way, and there are lots of benefits that you can deduce from this hadith. One of this is that if you can't get married, don't just get married and say it will work out. Because the hadith is not saying this, is it? Because sometimes people have this thought. In fact, some people would be married, you know, like some people would do this. And it did happen, you know. In my past experience, I have seen people get married, the first marriage, and then, you know, things are tough. And then someone tells them that, you know, Umar ibn Khattab saw that man who was married to a woman, and he told him to marry a second woman, and then things continued to be tough, and he told him to marry a third woman, and then he married a third woman, and she knew how to spin, so she taught everybody spinning, and then everybody started to spin, and he started to sell the clothes or materials they made, and so on, and then he became wealthy, or he became well off. Well, we're not looking at it from a rationalistic viewpoint. We're just looking at it from this hadith viewpoint. This is a hadith from the Prophet, an authentic hadith from the Prophet. And he says, he who cannot afford to get married, they should fast. It is not like, let them get married and then it would work out. You know, certainly we will talk about the ease of marriage, and we will talk about making things easy, and we will talk about, you know, the problem of extravagance and excessiveness in marriage, particularly in our countries, particularly in our societies and culture, that make things very complex and very burdensome. But there has got to be a certain degree of ability. Like, if you are still in high school and you just, you know, you don't know what, you can't do anything. You don't even know how to work at McDonald's, and you're still in high school, don't say, well, let me get married and it will work out. Yeah, just wait a little bit. This hadith is for you. Well, this hadith is for some people. Some people. And so the Prophet ﷺ was not talking to handicapped people. He was talking to young people capable from that aspect. But he's telling them, if you're capable with regard to, you know, physiological capability, you have to steadily pay attention to your ability to maintain a family, to sustain a family. So the hadith should be certainly pondered. I think that we'll talk about, you know, the period prior to marriage next time, inshallah, next week. We'll talk about the period prior to marriage and what people can do to avoid error and immorality, and to stay chaste until they get married. We'll talk about some solutions, inshallah, then. قُلْ قَالِي هَذَا أَسْتَغْفِرُ اللَّهِ يَا لَكُمْ سُبْحَانَكَ اللَّهُمْ بِحَمْدِكَ شَدَى اللَّهِ لَا أَسْتَغْفِرُكَ وَأَتُوبُ إِلَيْكَ